Dear Cosmo Babies, welcome back. We're going to switch it up today. I'm your host, Russell Mays, and we have a very, very special guest, Michael Levine. And if you don't know him, we're going to learn all about him today. And I think he has a lot of wisdom that we're going to try to glean from. And I think it will help bridge the gap between your beauty school experience and being successful behind the chair. So welcome, Michael. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me, Russell.
Awesome. So for those that have not had the gift of knowing you, how would you describe yourself to somebody? Who is Michael Levine? Man, myth, and legend.
Okay, I'm going to start with the myth and I'll probably just leave it there. It's really, really weird, but I define myself as a hairdresser. And above anything else, I define myself as a hairdresser. And even when I had kids, I still like hairdresser was the first thing on my bio. And I think the reason is I live and breathe hairdressing, and hairdressing has put me in a position to achieve every one of my childhood dreams, my life goals. And because of hairdressing, I have literally, I'm 55 years old. I've had a really amazing life. I met my wife through hairdressing. Through that, I have children. I've got businesses. Hairdressing has done everything for my life. And I'm eternally grateful that I walked into hairdressing school the day that I did, and I stuck with it.
That's great. I think
so that's really what I am, a hairdresser. So sorry to answer your question.
He's modest today. Being modest.
Thank you. You know, I've been humbled, and we can talk about that later too. And I think that's also why I've been kind of quiet. It's amazing how quickly, and you'll understand this as well, how quickly the industry moves past. And you know, if you're a big deal today, all it takes is you being quiet for 6 months before nobody knows who you are, because there's so many other hungry people willing to take that spot. And being humbled has probably been one of the best things that's ever happened to me. But it's also why I've been very, very quiet in social media. I've stopped telling people how to run their lives and how to run their businesses several years ago, since I've had my business, you know, have some pretty serious hits taken to it. But anyway, basically, I was a hairdresser. I had no idea what the possibilities of the industry could do. And through a series of fortunate events, I opened a salon and trained some people. And eventually my wife and I built a business from a two-chair salon to a 50-chair, or to three salons with 50 stylists, without having hired somebody with a clientele, by training people, by developing young talent. And by young, I mean new, not chronologically.
That's amazing. Absolutely amazing. I mean, people that have not run a salon cannot understand the magnitude of difficulty that it is to build places that big and have that many staff working for you, and to build that many hairdressers. That's really impressive.
Well, and also for us to achieve getting to that, I don't know why I just had, I want 50 employees. I just had this as a, that was my, the mark of success for me, was once I achieved 50. And we're not at 50 now, we're well below that. But that, to get to that 50, there we must have had 200 or 300 through our door.
Yeah.
You know, I'll often hire, when I have one spot, I'll hire three people. You know, because
not everyone's going to fit and work out. Yeah.
I'll be lucky that one works out.
Now, is it that they don't work out from a personality standpoint, or from a work ethic standpoint, or from a skill standpoint?
I think we're okay with developing skill. I will support somebody who needs coaching and needs their hand held a little bit longer. I'm happy to support you for years and not make any money from you. But I won't support, or we won't tolerate somebody that we think is a bad fit for our culture who might be destructive. We've turned away like very successful hairdressers in our business, knowing that they're not going to be long-termers. And when somebody leaves, it often, you know, creates chaos. And we'd rather, you know, we've always been low and slow. It's the way, same way to do my bleach. You know, we're a slow process. Our growth has always been organic. And we Just we'd re I just actually did an audition with a girl yesterday or 2 days ago, and I think she thought she nailed it. But for me, she sat down while her color was processing with her model, and for a lot of people, that's going to be totally not an issue. But for me, and for our culture, everybody in our salon has started as an assistant. So I have all these people that they're people cleaning up after her on her audition day, and I'm just like, on that audition, I'm seeing the very best of you. And if you're this comfortable now, and for me, I also consider the client chairs, and not everybody's like this, I'm psycho, but not, I consider those client chairs, those are sacred spaces for our clients. And you don't, a hairdresser does not sit down. Okay, listen, if your client's having an issue, if it occasionally it happens, but it's not a regular thing in our business. We'll sometimes do it if the client really wants to talk, if there's deep stuff. As you know, sometimes your clients, I had two people the other day. I was ready to strangle one of my staff. And then in the span of my first two clients, one had an assisted suicide of her mother between her appointments over the last 4 weeks. I didn't know about it. And then 2 weeks later, so she's telling me about that. And then my very next client, her husband has been diagnosed with terminal cancer. These are every 4 week clients. So things happen so quick. And I'm like, okay, I no longer want to kill my employee because now I have a little bit of perspective on life, on what really, really matters. So yes, in those situations, we'll get down and have a seat next to our clients and have a little whisper. As you know, I go off on tangents. But anyways, this person totally blew it. Yet she was skilled and she would have been great. Her finishing was outstanding. But I just kind of thought, that one little thing was a turnoff for our staff. And I, if I, if you're 30 years old and I have to teach you how to behave, at least in my salon, it's not going to work out, right? Because it's only going to go down.
So it's a work ethic and a personality issue that keeps people out of the Levine salons.
Yeah, and that's why we're really struggling right now because it's hard to get people. But we look for work ethic and we look for service aptitude. We look for people who, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was just going to say the reason that I want to point that out is because I think a lot of beauty school students and people new to the industry really think that my success is determined upon how awesome my haircutting is. And I'm trying to point out that it's not. It's based of it. Sure, there is a certain amount that has to be skilled. If I'm going in for a particular haircut, the haircut has to be decent, for you to build a clientele. But it doesn't have to be the world's greatest. You know what I'm saying? It's more about other things that will really separate someone from being truly successful and someone who's just trying to get by making minimum wage.
It's 100%. I don't know if you know, but we own two hair schools,
Yes.
and we built our hair schools due to our apprenticeship program that I felt gave me the right to teach people the reality of the salon industry. And in the second week, I always have a lecture to my students on what success looks like, and I talk to them about what a trial day in a salon is often like. And I say, "What do you think a trial day is going to be like?" And they're like, "Oh, we'll be doing shampoos and blow dries and maybe haircuts." I'm like, you're not even going to touch a client. If you came out of my school, maybe you'll touch a client. But if you've come out of another school, I may not let you touch a client. What I'm going to do is show you around, show you where everything is, and then I'm just going to sit back and watch what you do and see if you're a self-starter. And I'm going to be fully honest. On that trial day, all I want to see you do is clean and maintain with a smile on your face. That's all I want. And if I see that you're doing stuff, and not coming back after every task and going, okay, I've done that now. What should I do now? If I, right. And I'll tell you, man, we have had people on trial days. This has happened several times where it's like dad went out for cigarettes and never came back. They'll go like, I'm going to go buy a pack of gum and we never see them again 2 hours into the day. It's wild. But I tell you, man, it separates the wheat from the chaff. But
you
that's what we
know.
want. Listen, it's easy to be an asset to a salon when the salon's busy and there are butts in the chair. That's easy. The hard part about being an asset to the salon is what do you do when there's no clients in the chair? How do you add value? And that's what we want to see. We want to know that you're dialed into connecting with the needs of the salon that, hey, today's a slow day. We're going to be ripping out everything under the sinks. We're going to go deep. And those are things that a lot of beauty schools don't teach people because like that's somebody has to do that stuff. And the owner's going to do it. The owner's doing it. And I have an expectation that everybody does it. And it's not like that's your whole life with us. And I don't want you to have to do that. I want you to be a busy hairdresser who's generating money. And I tell people, like, as your motivation to get out of that first stage, get busy, right? Go to attend all your classes, bring in appropriate models, get good, and let's do that so we can put you on the path. Because I don't want you cleaning a bathroom for the rest of your life. I don't want you doing nothing but shampoos. But you've got to fight your way out of that. And the way you fight your way out of that is by proving yourself. And also, I want to see you doing that stuff because I'm going to have you maybe, if you do that really well, there's value to that because I might have you train the next person to do that. We have a girl who works for us right now. We adore her. And we're trying to move her into a supervisor position because she does all those things so well. And we say, okay, we don't think you should be doing that kind of stuff anymore. We want you to lead other people to do that stuff. You know, there's a
So
lot of
it's,
value. And
yeah,
sorry, go ahead.
go ahead, I'm sorry.
I think that if you can be the best version of whatever you need to be at any given time during the process of your career, then that's really what allows you to be a great mentor towards the end of it, is that life experience in being a leader.
It's almost like we're reframing what success is. Success when you're at the first stages of your career is not how many clients am I going to do a day. Success in the salon is like, even for me, I walked into my salon that I work at now. I said I closed my salon because of COVID and the rent was raising up and all that stuff. But I walk in the salon I'm at now and I notice a piece of paper right by the front door on the outside, not on the inside, on the outside. I walk by, I look at it, and there's no telling how many of the staff that has walked in before me who picks it up. I pick it up and I put it in the trash because I know every client that walks by is going to see that. So that's part of my being successful behind the chair is having a completely presentable salon. So if I'm going to get to the point where you're going to be the Russell or the Michael, you've got to go through and do all those things. Nobody gets to the level of busy hairstylist that cuts the corners of all these things that it takes to really present the place, to do all the service, to do all the little things in the service that really matter. It's the haircut's great, but it's the consultation. It's how I brush the hair. It's how clean my station is. It's how I shampoo their hair. It's how I blow it dry. It's how I finish it. It's how I talk to them. It's how I pre-book. It's all these other things that are enwrapped around the service itself. They are the service itself. And it's no different than when I go to the bathroom, if there's piss all over the lid, come on, that's I don't want a client to see that.
Of course.
you know what I'm saying? So we need to reframe it. So what would your
Can I add something
definition?
to what you just said, though?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Go
Okay,
ahead.
so one of the things that I always tell younger or newer staff, and even actually experienced staff too, because very often they haven't heard this. No client is going to you for a mediocre or shitty haircut, excuse my language. They're already expecting a good haircut. So if all you're delivering is a good haircut, you have just met their bare minimum expectations. And you need to understand that when you don't rave about a business that meets your bare minimum expectations, you don't tell your friends about it. You don't say, oh, my God, I can't wait to come back to this mediocrity, right? You didn't go to the hair salon expecting not to love your hair. So if all you've done is given good hair and nothing else, then you're not doing anything extra. And there's a lot of great hairdressers out there. You have to differentiate yourself by creating this environment, creating this incredible service. You mentioned pre-booking, and I put retail pre-booking and asking for referrals. I mean, it's not like this is new stuff, right? You know this, Russell. This is like the tried and true stuff. People used to say to me, oh, you're such a, like when I was kind of doing a lot of social media stuff with American Salon, they'd say, wow, you're so fresh in the industry. I'm like, I'm not fresh. I'm doing the stuff that was done in the 60s and 70s, man. I'm a dinosaur, but I think now we need to hear it more than ever.
Absolutely. What's old is new again. What's old is new. So going back to my next sketch, since we're talking about success and what it really means, so what would a 1 year out of beauty school, what could you let me think. So if I'm 1 year out of beauty school, what would be considered success for me? Versus 3 years versus 5 years. Do you set goals for people that are working for you?
We set goals based on their personal performance and their personal path. Everybody can do it, but not everybody does. I've had people do in 6 months what other people took 6 years to do. So I don't necessarily, and I used to do this when I was younger. I used to get very frustrated. I walked around with a lot of anger and I ruled with kind of an iron fist, and I would try to be putting square pegs into round holes. I don't do that anymore. Because I hire for people, I don't hire for skill set. I'm happy to have somebody. Of course, I don't want them to take forever, but I'm happy to have them take forever as long as they're contributing in other ways, as long as they're growing. I have a guy that works for us for now, right now, and he's been a year since beauty school, and he went to my school, and I probably have, serious conversations with this guy every 2 weeks about, his speed and things like that. I know that I'm beating my head against the wall with this guy, but his other assets are so good that I'm willing to let him take his time on his path because his path might be different. I had another girl, I remember I would talk to her and say, you need to fake it a little. Yet everybody gets upset with fake it till you make it, but you have to do it a little bit. And what it means to me is putting your best face forward and putting that smile on, and not letting your client know that you don't know what the hell you're doing. You've got to pretend you know a little bit. Go crap your pants in the back room and say, what the hell? But in the client, you're like, isn't that's gorgeous? You've got to sell it a little bit.
It's
And
showtime. It's
it
showtime.
is 100%. You're on stage. And I had a girl who worked for me that she's like, I cannot do that. I have to be able to back up everything I say. And for me, I was able to just say it. And then, it took me probably 5 years to be able to get to the point that I was even remotely backing up the way I was positioning myself. But I realized that, it took her 2 years to get there, and then she was fine. But like I said, I had other people that within 6 months, because the way we do our floor days, you have to earn your floor days in our salon. And I've had people get their full-time floor days within 6 months and be hitting commission within 9 months, and making great money within 3 years, like great money.
Right.
And then I have other people that are still minimum wage 3 years, 3, 4 years in,
Okay.
and but as long as they're trying, as long as they're not screwing up, as long as they're not being a detriment to the salon, we're gonna keep them. But they have to understand we're gonna hire somebody else, and that person's gonna skyrocket past them. I have a girl starting with us in a couple of weeks, and I have a really, really good feeling about her. And I had a meeting with all my sort of juniors, and I'm like, you guys have to be in some degree of healthy competition with each other, not in a negative way, not in a, oh, this bitch way, but in a
Right.
kind of like, hey, this person can do it. What are they doing that I'm not?
Right. So what are the personality traits or the characteristics of the person that's doing the 6 month fast track on their own versus the one that's just motoring along at a nice leisurely driving Miss Daisy pace?
First of all, those eager beavers, they're saying yes to every opportunity. They show up to every educational opportunity that we put out. I hope everybody does, but they show up at everything. They have no excuses. They're not calling in sick once a month, and they do that. They do literally exactly what I ask them to do. The things that I tell them to do are so textbook that I started telling people to do them before I'd ever actually done them myself. Saying this is how to be successful. I got it like strategies or something like that, one of those books, and I read it and I was like, oh, this is what you must do. I'd never done it myself, and all of a sudden a couple of them started listening to me and actually doing it, making sure that they asked for a referral, asked for a pre-book, and sold a product. Now you can't just have that as your script. You have to have that as your agenda, and knowing that you have to ask for a referral, that means you have to elevate the service that you're giving, because you know that you have to ask for that referral at some point. And it doesn't mean just delivering shit service and then at the end go, do you want to buy a product that we never talked about? Or do you want to pre-book the appointment that I never told you how long it would be till your next appointment? Or do you want to send a friend who is also going to experience this mediocrity? Right. So you have to elevate everything. And I find that when the people are on a path to success, some people are just born that way. Full disclosure, I feel like I was a little bit kind of born that way. I think it's self-delusion that I must have had about thinking that I was going to be successful. But it just kind of works. It's a mindset. And I was very, very lucky that it worked for me. And I see it with certain people that they're kind of like, this person will not accept anything less. So, I mean, you've met some of the people on my team.
Yes.
And one of my babies that I always kind of hold as my highest regard that started with me at 16, and she's in New York now as an editorial stylist. But she literally did everything that I said. And even when she was booked 4 months in advance, $200 a haircut, she was still promoting herself.
Yeah.
No one could get near her, but she's still promoting. I'll tell you, and this is as an aside, one of the things that infuriates me the most of anything in this industry is when I see people putting on their Instagram bio, not accepting new clients, like it's some kind of bragging rights.
Yeah.
Idiot. What
Yeah.
kind of business goes out of business? I can't even, but that's a different conversation.
I think that that is kind of an ego thing for a lot of people. You know, I mean, I would rather say have someone call and say, "Hey, well, you know, I can't get you in for 6 months," and have them go, "Oh my God, what? I can put you on the list."
Yes.
And then if somebody cancels, "Hey, you got lucky. You're in, baby. Here's your chance."
100%. Well, it's just really frustrating. Like it's almost like for people, that's how they see the pinnacle of success of not taking new clients. Well, I'm like, well, what are you charging for a haircut? Like, what's your pricing? Are you getting 500 a client for a haircut color? If you're not, and you've stopped taking new clients, Chromium said a long time ago, you take a train off its tracks and it stops moving.
That's right.
Man, like I talked about earlier in this, you get yourself out of the game for a minute. There is 100 hungry people in your town who want what you have, and they're happy to take over for you.
Well,
And
there's a
it's
vacuum. There's a vacuum. When I remove myself, it's not gonna, that hole's not gonna stay there. It's gonna get filled
right.
in with something else. It may not be as good as what I was delivering, but it's got filled in somehow, you know?
Yeah. And you blink, and all of a sudden you're old, and your clients are old. Right. And all of a sudden you're an old lady hairdresser, right? Because you've taken yourself out of it. I don't know, man. I work really hard to not be an old lady hairdresser. I am, and I love my clients. Thankfully, I've got enough little young ones in there peppering through. But man, if I took myself out of it, I would only have one demographic of clients. It would be kind of wealthy, older clients. And how fun is that?
Something you said a long time ago that has always stuck with me and has like been in the back of my head judging me and judging my work c constantly is, I can tell how old a hairdresser is by the type of work that they're doing. And I thought, oh my
I
God,
can't believe.
does my work date me? I don't want to be dated by the type of clientele that I'm doing, that someone can say, oh yeah, I can tell the hairdresser that you're going to is definitely over 50. I'm like, oh my God, I can't do that. I gotta start freshening and younging my stuff up.
I love that you remember that because I see it all the time. And I'm sure you see it. I see it through social media a lot. One of my hair mentors passed away a little while ago, and a Vancouver legend. I love this guy. But anytime I had one of his clients in my chair, I could always see his pinnacle of his learning and his pinnacle of success by the angles of his layers, right? And by the way the hair sat and the way he approached things, that he would approach things in a way that I don't want to say is wrong, but it wasn't necessarily achieving the results that the client was asking for. And then he would be busy because he was great. They would sit in my chair and I'd be like, I want to take you in a different direction, but still try to achieve the same look because what you're seeing and what you're receiving are maybe two different things. But I see it through social media. I see hairdressers posting their photos of their new work and legendary hairdressers. And you look at it and you go, man, like
I've seen it
in the
before.
mid-90s, that probably would have been pretty top tier stuff. I'm very lucky because having schools, because I have so many amazing young staff so many of them are better than me. It really keeps me on my toes and keeps my ability to evolve fresh. And I'm still, I'm always working on it, but every single day I'm working at staying, I don't want to say staying relevant, but having my work be as good as what the current level of desirable work is and adding to my repertoire. I could still hammer out a really, really nice grad bob. And if you want me to tease the crown of it, I can probably do that. I can do that Velcro set Jennifer Aniston first generation friends cut pretty well. I built my business on it, but thankfully I'm not staying there,
I've one thing that I've had to do is almost relearn technique, because I noticed that the stuff that they're doing today that's really, really popular and really hot is technically wrong. It creates lumps and it creates holes and it creates all these different things that for the longest time I'm working to perfect this shape that doesn't have holes or lumps or creases in it. So now I'm thinking, okay, you know what? In my mind, I'm thinking, I'm going to jack this haircut up, but I'm going to do it on purpose so that I can create this kind of look that's really popular with this wolf type of cut, with this disconnected layers around the front that's falling and exposing these different things. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do it. So I'm trying to break myself of habits that I've taught myself for so long so that I can stay current and stay new. That's tough.
That's it's very tough, and it's awesome that you're doing, and it's awesome that your ego isn't getting in the way of that, because I think that's a big thing. Is there's a lot of hairdressers our generation and older who look at certain work and go, oh, that's exactly what we were doing in the whatever, and it's like, no, it's not. It's absolutely not what you were doing. It's
It
totally
is
different.
not, no.
We just had a we had a haircutter come into our salon who does really beautiful visual work. Visual work meaning like through social media, and he showed his signature cut, and there was no sectioning. It was cut dry. It was cut in about 3 minutes, and it looked spectacular. It looked great, and I learned something from it. And I'm like you. I'm you know I try to be efficient with my sectioning. I don't go superfluous with it, but I again I'm classic. And I looked at it, I was like, okay, this is a different mindset because I've been trying to do what this guy does and I've been doing it totally wrong. And just little things. It's really liberating to get yourself out of that and just see that there's so much new stuff. And there's still really wonderful technical hair cutters out there in that younger generation. There's not a lot, but there's some. And I look at somebody like Jacob Kahn, and I think he does. Do you see his stuff? I think it's really nice to see that this is a guy who's working clean. His razor work is really great. Everything's technical, but he's got a looseness to it and a modernness to it that works really well.
That he has that soft aesthetic that is so hard to get from a technical haircutter, but yet he walks that tightrope really, really well. Yeah, really, really well. I think that going back to what you're saying about ego preventing someone from growing, I think a lot of times ego is nothing more than fear. I don't want my fear to prevent me from growing. I don't want my fear to say, oh, what if I fuck up this haircut? No, I want to be able to go through and I know that I have enough chops that if I screw it up too bad, I can fix it. And I'll work on a doll head. I'm doing those videos for Jatai and they'll say, hey, we need to do this haircut. And I'm thinking, oh, I ain't done that one. I'll give it a shot. And so I'll go through and work on it. And it forces me to grow. When they say, we want you to do a haircut and they'll pick some celebrity. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that celebrity has no hair. And I got this mannequin head that's got a mountain of hair. So how do I make this mountain of hair look like the celebrity? And that challenge is I appreciate that, but I think it's the ego is more of a fear-based thing. And bringing this all the way around full circle, I think maybe that's what's preventing the 6 year driving Miss Daisy from being the 6 month is that 6 month has they don't have that fear mechanism that's going to stop them from, yeah, sure, I'll try it. Whereas the other ones are like, oh, I don't know if I can do that. So
Yeah,
they're,
I mean,
yeah.
I don't know if you ever did this early in your career, but I see it sometimes. I'll see somebody just cut a haircut forever, hoping that at some point somebody will bail them out. Just keep going,
I'll
right?
figure
It's
it
like,
out
okay,
sooner or
even
later if I keep going, but then I got no hair
or
left.
somebody will come and stop me, and paint over maybe. I've seen I you know the cutting hair for 2.5 hours, be like, okay, listen, you need me to step in and take over here.
I had an assistant that was so afraid of cutting hair. One of the hairstylists in the salon needed a haircut, and she literally cut one section on the side of his head for an hour. She had not moved past the ear on the side of the head. And I was just going to let her wallow in that and see how long it, and she was just going to go and go and go. And then by the time I walked up and said, hey, how's it going? She looked at me and just burst into
Right.
tears.
He was like, where were you an hour ago when this I've been waiting?
Oh my gosh. So Tell me about your academy and the philosophy behind it, and educate me how that's different than the traditional beauty school. Because if I'm correct, Canada does not require beauty school.
British Columbia doesn't.
Okay, British
The
Columbia
rest of
does. Okay.
Canada does.
Okay.
So we've been deregulated for about 15 or 16, maybe 17 years now.
Do they still have like
Because,
traditional beauty schools there, even though it's
yes,
deregulated?
yeah.
Okay.
But most of those beauty schools have now gone under.
Okay.
And some very, very big schools have gone under. But the three or four big schools are still doing really, really well. So when it became deregulated, that's when I got into the school business because I thought, okay, now I can create my own curriculum based on what my needs are as an employer and that what my needs are as somebody who develops new talent. So our whole agenda, first of all, a lot of the things that I did in our school were to fix the problems that I had when I went to school. And I went to a very traditional beauty school, and this is going way back. So today's beauty school student isn't going to relate to this, but I never put a foil in hair once during hair school. And when I went to school, all they were trying to do was get you to pass the test.
Yep.
So there was not a single relevant skill, but what I did learn was clean sectioning because of perming,
Yep.
right? So that there's value to perming, but I was doing two perms a day
Yeah,
and
the
doing
nine
wet.
section perm wrap. Yep.
Yeah, but I do think that that did relate in clean sections when I foil and maybe clean section. So there's some value to that, but in our school, we don't do perming. We do one fake perm wrap on a mannequin, and that's it. We don't do them in the salon, and we focus solely on relevant hairdressing skills related to classic technique. So I teach a classic graduated bomb, but I also teach how to relate it to today's work. And we have them cutting hair in the first 2 hours of the first day. And they do two haircuts. They'll do a blunt and then they'll do a layered haircut. And I think we have them foiling on day four. So our whole thing is to get their hands busy. We don't talk about it, we do it because you could study hairdressing academically, for a year and your hands still won't do what your brain wants them to do. So we pepper them with so much information in our 600-hour program. It's only 600 hours, 6 months, 3 days a week. We have them doing grab bobs on day nine. Right. Like it's in most schools, you've not even picked up scissors. Our whole thing is we're going to kick you into the deep end of the pool. Most people will swim, and those people that are struggling, we're standing right next to them to help them. We do really small class sizes, maximum of one teacher per seven students. And we're right on top of them the whole time. And nine times out of 10, people come out of that pretty solid with their hairdressing. And my main agenda, and I tell this to my students, you're not going to leave here as a good hairdresser. You might, it's possible, but it's very unlikely. But I am going to teach you to bypass that first year post hairdressing school where you're screwing people's hair up. We're going to teach you not to screw up. You might not blow people away with the work that you do, but nobody is going to be walking out of your chair in tears. Because those are the things that cause people to leave this industry, those bad days. We want to teach people to not have bad days. And hopefully every next day you're improving on your past mistakes or your past discoveries. And every day you get a little bit better. But in our I find with a hair school, there comes a point where you stagnate, where you stop learning. And it's like in driving lessons, you need to get out onto the road yourself. You need to be on that highway with yourself without somebody next to you with a steering wheel and their own brake. That's when the real learning happens. And so we found that at 6 months, our students tend to be checking out a little bit anyways. So that's sort of where that magic number came from. And we've helped launch a lot of amazing careers, but I will say this, I can't take credit for the really great ones because then I have to take blame for the really bad ones. So there's just been a lot of really successful people come through our doors, and I feel like we're a very good program.
I mean, having them face their fear on day one and continue to face their fear through it, I think it not only allows them to grow at a much faster pace, but it also sets the tone for the rest of their career because they have, what do they call it? Success only comes after failure, right? Not just in the dictionary, but the entire world. So you have to face your fear. Sometimes you're going to fail. Most of the times you're going to fail, but then you improve after that. So teaching them that in the very beginning can set the tone for their entire career all the way through, that when they come up to something that they don't quite know how, they can work it out as they're doing and not just theoretically figure it out and then still be afraid when they try to go apply it.
Yes, 100%. And I think a lot of the things that I do try to teach our students is to really think, to think about whether, like, I've taken a very logical approach to hairdressing. I feel like you don't have the right to teach unless you understand why you're doing what you're doing at any given time. And there's a lot of stuff that I don't understand why other people do, so I just don't do it. But I have a reason for doing everything. And I explain that reason to the students so that, you know, if they forget the step of a haircut, if, you know, if haircutting is just memorizing steps, yeah, then you're not relating to it on a creative level. And I teach my guys, it's like, look, these are some basic ideas and we're going to put them together to achieve anything. But I want our students to be able to think their way out of situations.
Yeah, that's, if you're not learning how to think, you're just learning patterns. And sooner or later, yes, those patterns are not going to work. You're going to get yourself, yes, into a situation where it's going to let you down. For someone that doesn't have the privilege of working with us and they're in the middle of nowhere, how can they bridge that gap from getting out of beauty school and not knowing anything other than sanitation and sterilization into actually becoming a working hairdresser that has a career path that can be, you know, bright?
I really, really think that you have to find a mentor no matter what. I think that there's a real problem in our industry about, first of all, I think every hairdresser in social media that tells you to go independent is doing this industry a disservice, and it's degrading the quality of the industry. Hairdressing school is designed to get you just the first step of your training. Everything else, it has to come from somebody else. And whether it's being surrounded by helpful coworkers, if you're like, okay, I'm going to be on the floor, but you've got people that you can bounce ideas off of, I really think going independent is one of the worst things that you can do. Going into a suite right away, that kind of thing, I think is terrible. So I feel like that every town has an opportunity for a mentor somewhere. There has to be. You've got to really carefully find the salon that makes sense for you, but you have to find a salon that that has a proven track record of developing young talent. There are so many salons that will take advantage of you, but not help you. I've had several of my students say, oh, I'm going to go work at my friend is opening a salon. And she said she'd show me. I'm like, does your friend have the right to teach you anything? Yeah. Like who is this person? I really, really think that it's a tough one because there's so few of these salons anymore, but they used, yeah, to be the norm. But you've got to find a company that's going to have your back, that's not going to yell at you when you screw up, you know, that is going to allow you to fail. And I know for me, when somebody does something disastrous, I'm like, did you learn from this? You know, that's, yeah, like, I, you, we'll refund the client. Don't worry. I got, mm-hmm, you. I'm not going to yell at you about it.
Yeah.
That type of support, I think young hairdressers generally need, you know, it's just a matter of how long they need it, but I think you should find a company, a real salon. And I think, beyond that, I always see this. I always see the people that go independent right away, the first thing they're looking for is community and culture. So they show up at everything, which is great. They show up at every event. They join every page, you know, because they need community. I really do think people should be trying to find community. But if you can't find community that makes sense for you, like, definitely show up at everything. Take as many classes as you can. But I'll see people take so many random classes, and I do think that you should be kind of following a certain kind of train of philosophy with hairdressing. Like, don't follow everybody, follow a couple of people, yeah, that do things that that resonate with you. That if, you know, if you develop mastery of only one or two things, that's okay. I think, you know, I think you can do that nowadays where you don't have to be a master of everything. I think those opportunities are there, but, you know, follow the right people. And really focus on that part of your career if that's the thing you want to do. I see people in my company that really struggle with men's haircutting. And you know, as much as I want to push them into it, it's like, well, listen, if that's not your thing, we just won't put guys in your chair. Like, yeah, if you don't want to get good at that, if it's not a passion, I'd rather not have you stress out and do, you know, terrible work and be miserable at work Let's get you focusing on the things that you want to specialize in. And I do think that there's, although everybody says the same thing, they all want to be blonde balayage specialists. Every single person says that. And there is such a, there's so much noise of the same thing through social media. I don't know. It's a tough one out there. I do think every town, every city has a couple of good salons. Get a foot in the door with one of those places that's going to have your back.
I think that that's really, really a solid approach is find a mentor and be discerning about who you follow on social media, because there's a lot of hacks out there that are going to lead you down the wrong path. We should probably have a database of the people that we recommend.
Yeah,
We'll
no, it's
charge.
true.
Yeah, we'll charge.
Yeah. There's some great people and who do just absolutely stunning work. And then there's, I don't know, there's some hacks. There's like a guy, a local guy, he's got, more than 500,000 followers and he's so famous. But you look at the, and his work looks good at the end, but good Lord, like bleeds every foil, and just doesn't care because he's dropping a shadow root over it. But it's like, man,
That's
just
gonna
it's
fade. That's gonna fade.
yeah.
So,
Oh, weird.
the question that Annie always likes to end off with is, what advice would you give a 20-year-old Michael if you could go back and talk to him?
That's a tough one. That's a really, really tough one because all of the, I think the main thing is, I think I'd just be nicer. I think I used to be kind of an asshole. I used to really think it, my anything that I did was the right thing. Any way I thought was the right thing. I think it's just that usual, 20-year-old bravado. But I think I would have been nicer, and I think I there's a few opportunities that I said no to that I passed on, that I really wish that I would have done. But overall, I gotta say, things turned out okay for me. I think what I would say is, what I would have said to a 40-year-old Michael, right? When I had already to avoid some of the stuff because we've had massive successes and then we've had a major, major failure. And I would have liked to have mitigated my failures a little better than I did, and navigated those things, and been able to stop the bleeding sooner, and taken a few things back, that I did. But again, as you said earlier, you don't ever learn anything from your successes. You really grow from your failures, and I feel like I've grown a lot as a person and as a mentor. The only thing is now that I'm 55. As a business owner, I don't necessarily have the same drive to take over the world that I used to. I don't have that same energy. I don't have that same anger. And I feel like I wish I had that hunger and anger and drive. I used to not be able to walk past a for lease sign without going, we could put a salon here, And now I just be like, no, and I don't ever want to open another salon ever. We're in a new salon now. When we opened this salon, we didn't want to do another salon. We were on the fence, like, are we done? Because our lease came up at our last place and the landlord took over our space. And we're like, do we have the want to build another hair salon? Back in the day, that was like, I lived for opening hair salons. Now, no.
I'm the same way. I'm just like, I just want to go to work, pay my rent, go home. But that's
Swimming
not true.
upstream is a
That's not
challenge, man.
true. Awesome.
No,
Thank
but
you
you're
so
doing this,
much.
right?
Yeah,
You're doing
well,
this stuff, which is so awesome.
I'm doing this, and Douglas and I are working on a mentoring program online. We're trying to take what we would do in the salon and put it online and build a community
Amazing.
and build a force behind it. Once we get a little more propagated out, I'll send you a link and have you check it out and maybe give us some
Yeah.
constructive criticism for it. So that's what we're
Love it.
working on. But thank you
Amazing.
so much for coming on. I truly appreciate it. And we will probably have you on in the future again because we know you got a lot of information to share. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And how can people find you if they would like to follow you? You
I
have.
have a blog that I've not been writing on. It's michaellevinehair.com, I think. And it's michaellevinehair.com. And
Your
then
YouTube
on
channel.
Instagram.
Yeah. And
A
you have a
YouTube
YouTube
channel. I
channel.
don't even know what it's called anymore. It might be Mike, just Google me, bro.
There you go. Hey, I'm famous. I'm on the
Yeah,
internet, baby. Awesome. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon. All right,
thanks
bye-bye.
for having me, Russell. All the
Yeah.
best.